Welcome. You've tuned into Beyond Academia, the LSC-sponsored podcast for adventurous research students. I'm Peter Harrington, and with the help of expert guests, we're going to explore career options, skill sets, and research opportunities you don't typically find on the traditional academic runway. So buckle up, get set for the journey, and let's go places on what I hope will be a thought-provoking ride. Presenting is a critical skill that all research students know they should master. Whether the audience is a group of fellow academics, expectant students, or potential investors backing a new idea, you are expected to stand up and communicate effectively. But if only it was that easy! In my 30 years as a professional, the number of substandard presentations I've sat through far outweighs the ones that have impressed. So how do you get it right? In this episode, I meet two experienced presenters who also have successful academic backgrounds. In 2016, Dr. Joshua Chu Tan won the 3-minute thesis Asia-Pacific presentation final. Joshua is now a postdoctoral fellow at the John Curtin School of Medical Research and lecturer at the Australian National University Medical School in Canberra. But before we hear from Joshua, I caught up with Kajal Singarajka, who we heard from in the previous episode. Kajal completed her MBA in New York before starting out on her global entrepreneurial journey. Over recent years, she has delivered many presentations to students, academics, investors, and clients. So I began by asking Kajal, what makes a good presentation?
I think over the years, and I've seen a number of pitches from PhD students, from MBAs, etc., I think first and foremost is an authentic presentation. When the person is relaxed, when they know their stuff and they are not being overly prescriptive, that really comes through in the way that they communicate. So how you present in a way that's authentic, I think, is extremely important. And what does that rely on? I think this comes down to your preparation. You don't need to be overly prescriptive, but if you have a few points for each of the things that you want to get across, if you're looking at slides, that helps you be more relaxed before you go onto stage, and the audience can really tell that.
Kajal, in your experience, is being able to present effectively really that important?
Yes, being able to present is really that important. And I've seen this across contexts in the corporate world, in academia, when you're presenting research, and with founders I've worked with who've pitched and fundraised effectively. You can have the best idea, the best research, the best business, but if you cannot articulate that in the right way and present that in the right way, those ideas will be lost and the gravitas of that will be lost.
So if you're a bad presenter, it really presents a ceiling for you in your career aspirations.
Yes, and I'll let me bring this to an example. We were in Davos last year with around 200 PhDs, varying from machine learning, neuroscience, very deep tech topics, and they were all brilliant. But the ones who were too micro-detailed, who really didn't use vocabulary which you and I could converse in every day,
so those understandable, easy,
understandable, relatable language, and just reduce the complexity. You know, imagine you're talking to someone that knows nothing about this topic that you're an expert in. If you can get it across to them in simple language, then you've done your job. And I'd recommend Richard Feynman has a technique around this, where if you can convey your ideas to a child, then that's when you've really been able to present the topic clearly, because you can reduce it, the complexity, down to very, very simple language.
And that's quite interesting, because I heard the whether you're a fan or not a fan of the original Top Gear, but Top Gear team had a mantra which was, this has got to appeal to a 9-year-old, and if it appeals to a 9-year-old, we will automatically attract a much wider audience.
Exactly. So I think reducing the complexity and density is key. And another thing I have seen presenters do wrong is just, if you're using slides, putting too much detail on the slides.
Oh,
Yes.
So strong visuals and a really strong story that's relatable will beat one of those dense essay slides any day.
It's interesting. For me, I find people who put lots and lots of information on slides, it's really a prompt to help them through their presentation, which just smacks of not enough preparation. Is that fair, or am I being harsh?
No, you're not being harsh. I would agree, and I think putting that detail on the slide, you're overcompensating, yes, because maybe you didn't prepare, but then people aren't looking at you. They aren't looking at the passion which you're trying to communicate. They're reading a slide. And another good specific example of this is I went to London Demo Day recently, and this was three universities, King's, Imperial, UCL. A number of the presenters were PhD students, actually. And the best pitches were the ones where they opened with a personal story about why they started the business. They didn't use any complicated language, even though some of the businesses were on things like precision technology and cancer. But they really brought it down to a human level. And in those first, literally 1 minute, they had the hook for the audience.
That's a very important word, stories. People love stories. A lot of us fortunate enough to have stories at bedtime. It's in our DNA. We love stories, and I think as soon as someone uses that word as part of a presentation, we lean forward. What have you found the best ways that help people to improve their presenting skills?
So I think observation. I've seen people who've improved by literally watching the best presenters on YouTube. It may sound very basic, but looking at body language, looking at how people like presidents present, what do they do? What are they doing differently? Another thing is using frameworks. So this is something I've learned more recently that people are doing more and more of, is the storytelling aspect. So there's a methodology called the Story Grid, which was developed by someone in the US who's actually a writer. And he talks about how to keep momentum, how to deliver the story arc, how should the conclusion be presented. So a lot of that can be tailored through to the actual presentation. And genuinely, I think being able to rehearse a few times before you go up will help you be more relaxed and be more authentic, which is one of the first points I made. I think audiences really relate to people who are themselves, and you'll be more yourself if you can be relaxed. And I suppose the final point is know your audience. I've seen so many dry presentations of things that I don't want to know about because the person hasn't done their research, or they've just put a generic presentation in front of you. I think that's probably the worst thing you can do.
So moving on then, final question. Which people in your experience make the best presenters?
The best presenters are people who really know their stuff, but moreover, is really passionate about what they're talking about. I think when someone is passionate, that comes across, the audience can relate to it, and they come away feeling really inspired and learning something. If you've done those two things, that will stick in someone's head if that's your goal from the end of the presentation. And those two things rely on all of the things we've just talked about: good preparation, strong visuals, storytelling. That's when I think presentations are extremely effective.
It's fitting that Kajal talked about people who make the best presenters, because my next guest is an award winner. Based in Canberra, Australia, Dr. Joshua Chutan won the 2016 Asia Pacific 3-minute thesis final. I caught up with Josh to find out how much of his achievement was down to inherent talent, luck, or plain hard work. I started by asking him about his earliest memories as a presenter.
So my first memory of presenting something in front of a decent-sized audience, wasn't even that decent-sized, probably 30, 40 in the end, was in year 7, I believe, and I would have been probably 10 or 11, and I was going for one of those leadership positions at my intermediate school. Now, the position meant that I had to give a speech in front of the entire cohort on why I believed and why they should vote for me as their head boy, etc. And I remember having flashcards, so I think I wrote down word for word exactly what I was going to say on all my flashcards, which is already mistake number one. But at the time, I thought I was really clever in doing that. And I went on stage. I was very, very confident. But wow, I think the nerves just got to me when I got up stage. And I was literally shaking in my boots. I remember afterwards, actually, some of my friends were actually telling me that they could see my knees just buckling and shaking as I was up there. I'm surprised I could even hold my flashcards. I think my hands were shaking so much. So needless to say, it didn't go as planned. I think I got everything that I wanted to say in the end, but the delivery definitely wasn't what I was hoping for and what I was expecting. So I didn't get the position that I wanted to. But despite it being a, I guess you could say, somewhat of a train wreck, I actually really enjoyed the thrill of it.
So, Josh, as a researcher, how did you take to presenting?
So research presentations are, you know, I'll be honest, they're quite a tricky beast. And I think it did take me quite a while to really figure it out. Now, what do I mean by this? When I first started, or actually the first time that I presented solid research was in my honors year. So here in Australia, the honors year is similar to what it is in the UK, for example, where it's a single intensive year of research. So there's no more coursework. And ultimately it culminates in the writing and submission of a thesis for the majority of your grade. So it's really a way to figure out whether or not you're fitted towards a career in research, if you're fitted towards eventually doing a PhD or not. Now, I only recall doing one scientific presentation during my undergrad leading up to that. And even then, that was quite a small presentation. So when I figured out that one of the first things that you had to do during your honors year was to present an initial honors research proposal seminar in front of the entire school, so in front of the entire John Curtin School, in my case, it was pretty daunting. You know, I was pretty scared. I was quietly confident because of what I said earlier. I kind of started to enjoy being able to present, but I mean, that was in high school. That was in the first year or two of undergrad. That was not an honors research seminar in front of not just your peers, but in front of a lot of the leading academics in the school, in Australia, and in the world. So it's a pretty daunting thing to do straight off the bat in honors. So what I decided to do was to go the, I guess you can say, a dramatic route. So I really tried to hit home the fact that, you know, the disease that we're working on is a real issue and that there's all these things that I want to do in my honors research here for it. And, you know, that, you know, I think we can do this in the 1 year. I was so optimistic about everything. And whilst it probably sounded good to peers, to people that are seasoned veterans, it was perhaps a little bit like a car salesman pitch. And in fact, I did have one person say that I could easily be a car salesman. At the time, I took it to be a compliment, but I think thinking back, the individual meant it a little bit more as an insult. As a passive-aggressive insult. So, needless to say, it maybe didn't go the way that I thought it would. But in saying that, I think I learned a lot about the delivery in how to deliver a good presentation of that. So I figured out based on feedback that maybe I was able to capture an audience's attention, but not in the way that I had hoped, right? I wanted to be able to ultimately have them understand what it is that I wanted to do, have them understand the research that we're doing, but not just that, but the bigger picture. And I think that's often what's missed in a lot of these research presentations. And I think I went too far that way in my first honors presentation, in that it was too much of what the bigger picture is, not enough of what it is that I'm actually going to do and the details that are ultimately needed in a research presentation. So, you know, I learned what polite applause sounds like, but I also at the same time learned what it felt like to really capture an audience, or at least some of the audience. You know, you could specifically see some people quite engaged, but by all means, I think it was probably only 20-30% at maximum of the audience being interested in what I was saying. So I do remember that very vividly, that first honors initial seminar, and I do remember seeing lots of people's faces that weren't quite with me. There were a few frowns in the faces. You have those kind of seasoned academics that perhaps didn't take it well, thought I was a little bit too arrogant maybe, and I remember thinking afterwards that those are the people that I need to turn around. I'm not going to change how I want to present the work. I just have to present it better, right? I just have to find that line a little bit more and to toe that line a bit better so that I don't only capture one part of the audience. I capture everyone. I capture that person, that individual who thought I was just trying to sell them a car.
So you've described your first presentation as a train wreck, and you've been labelled a car salesman. So how did you manage to fly so high as a presenter?
You know, everyone knows the saying, practice makes perfect, right? And, you know, it's, however cliche it is, it rings true yet again here. You have to practice presenting. For me, it was just about putting myself out there. If there was an opportunity to present, I would do it. You know, and over time, I'd be able to build on that and build on that. And I think practicing in presentations is actually quite hard because a lot of people get nervous standing in front of an audience. And in order to practice that, you have to do it. So you're putting yourself in the lines then again, so to speak. So, you know, it's difficult. It's daunting, yes, but you have to constantly put yourself out there. I'd say that maybe you have a checklist, you know, instead of going out in your second or third talk and being like, I want to be able to speak like Barack Obama straight away, have things you're working on, you know, whether it's, okay, this talk, I don't want to use any notes at all, or this talk, I want to keep within the time, or this talk, I'm going to work on my voice. And, you know, having those checklists, eventually you'll be able to combine them all and produce a talk that you're really proud of, right? And for me, one of the biggest things was gaining confidence, was being confident when I was up there. And that's something that for sure you can learn, right? Or yeah, you can even learn the ability to fake confidence when you're up there. You know, everyone knows what a nervous voice sounds like. Work on that, you know? And how you work, I'll get into a little bit about how I think I worked on it in a little bit. But one of the big things was being confident in what you're about to present, right? You have to truly believe that you are the expert. And a lot of times you are on that topic that you're about to say. The audience are there to learn. Well, I'd hope most of them are there to learn. And you are the expert. right? There is a beautiful point in time when you're about to present, before you've even said a word, and you're standing there, and there's that silence as the audience is just waiting for you to say your first word, where nobody in that room, auditorium, wherever you are, has any idea of what is about to happen and what you're about to say, except for you. You are the expert. You know the content, right? You wrote that talk. Okay, be confident in that, right? Be confident in it. And that's how I started to really build my confidence, when I truly, truly believed that, right? Again, it's fine to be nervous. It's natural. In fact, it would be strange if you weren't nervous. Nerves show that you care about what you do. At least that's how I think about it, right? It's just, you know, but despite those nerves, you have to let your confidence shine through. And that comes with practice. That comes with time. And a lot of that is to do with your voice and how you project your voice.
So how do you use your voice?
You know, one of the big things that really, really helped me was when I realized that I was telling a story to the audience. Doesn't matter what I'm talking about, doesn't matter if it's really hard science, you can still make it into a story. You can have a protagonist, you can have an antagonist. It's much easier to construct the story when you can set up your characters, you can have a setting, right? All in the context of your work. Once I realized that was what I was doing, I really started to love doing it. Okay, I really started to have a lot of fun writing talks and giving talks because I was telling the audience a story. Ultimately, this led me to compete in what was known as the 3-minute thesis, where PhD students had 3 minutes and a single PowerPoint slide with no animations to, well, essentially present their research, present their thesis. And I remember watching one of the finals held at the Australian National University, which is where I was doing my PhD. And I loved it so much that I decided I was going to sign up the year after. And, you know, I was luckily enough to able to do well. So I ended up winning my university's finals. And then I won the Asia Pacific one as well. And in this experience, I learned a lot about presenting. Sorry, a lot about what it means to present something effectively. I mean, you only have 3 minutes. You have to be effective. And I love using analogies. Some people may think it's cheesy, it's corny or whatever, but when used effectively, especially when you have a really short amount of time, which a lot of talks tend to have, it's an incredibly powerful tool to convey complex, jargon-heavy information into something that everyone can understand and in a short amount of time. You know, and that's one of the hardest things, towing the line between being condescending and actually having it be understandable without being too complex. That's the biggest challenge.
Fascinating, Josh. And is there anything else you want to add?
Oh, there's actually one thing that's actually incredibly effective that I think a lot of young researchers don't see the value in, is pausing. Right, knowing where to pause in your talk is incredibly, incredibly useful. Okay, a lot of young researchers, again, it's all about these details. You make the mistake of cramming as much information as you can into a short talk. You just fly through graphs and graphs and graphs. And while showing the data and the work you did is great, it can be pretty overwhelming for audience members, you know? So again, you find that central story, find the central idea, and choose the data that illustrates that story. If people want to see more, they can read your paper. They can ask you questions later, you know? But know where to pause in your talk. You know, you shouldn't be talking the entire time. Talks have ebbs and flows. You have to wax and wane your voice, what you're saying, with those ebbs and flows. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, what talk it is. There's no way that the entire talk will be a climax, right? There's going to be times where you're perhaps explaining something that is a little bit dry, but you need it to understand the eventual punchline, you know, the eventual central idea that you're trying to portray. So you have to, you know, if you're speaking as if everything in your talk is the most important thing in the world, then that can be really confronting as well. And I think the audience eventually will lose interest. So you have to be able to understand. This comes with the preparation. This comes with understanding your content, as I was saying earlier. You have to know where your talks ebb and flow.
So Josh, last question. Has all your work on presentations been worth it?
This is a no-brainer for me. I mean, absolutely, times a thousand. I mean, it's so incredibly important to be a good presenter, I think, in this day and age, in academia or in any field. You know, the skill to convey information in a concise yet understandable way to any audience is so important. You know, for one thing, you never know who you're going to meet, right? Having that skill to, for example, if you do something like the 3-minute thesis, having the skill to give an elevator pitch is incredibly handy. You know, we need to convey information in an accessible way. As researchers, as people in academia, not even academia, just research in general, the public, people outside of our field, they have a right to know and understand what it is we do. You know, for one thing, a lot of funding comes from the government, and that's from taxpayers' money. So the general public have a right to understand what it is we do. It's completely arrogant for any of us to assume that they don't care or they don't really want to know, or worse, they won't even understand. You know, that is such arrogant thinking, and it hurts me when I see people that think like that. You know, they have a right to understand. And that's really important as well if we're lobbying for funding to a non-scientific audience. You know, a lot of the people that make these big decisions about where the money go probably aren't experts in your field. So you have to have the ability, and you have to have the know-how to convey what it is you need, convey your research, convey why it's important to a non-scientific audience, to an audience that's outside of your field, right? You know, in addition to that, the exposure I got from presenting well has been immense. You know, people that are sitting there can see straight away, and if they can understand, they can talk to you straight away. They can offer you jobs, offer you positions. You know, for me, it helped me get recognized as a researcher. You know, it helped me, I truly believe it helped me gain respect in the industry. You know, it's hard if you just kind of rely on traditional metrics such as papers and publications. You know, there's a lot of great publications out there, but for some reason, being a good speaker really does set you apart. You know, and I can safely say, in fact, I can 100% say with confidence that my exposure that I got from all the presentations I gave got me jobs. It really did. I can't say exactly where, but I have been offered positions in labs simply because of the way in which I was able to present my work effectively to them.
Well, that brings the curtain down on presenting. I hope you can make full use of the advice and insight highlighted in this episode, which just leaves me to say a big thank you to our expert contributors, Kajal Singarachka and Joshua Chu Tan. My name's Peter Harrington, and you've been listening to Beyond Academia. Go well on your journey, wherever it takes you.